When the Bagthorpes arrived at the knoll, they saw at a glance that the banquet was going to be a thoroughgoing affair. Already parked in front of the house were two vans and a Rolls-Royce, which turned out to be the property of the head chef. Mr. Bagthorpe did not at the time know this, and leaped to the conclusion that this was a recent acquisition of Uncle Parker's, left in this prominent position with the express intention of impressing and infuriating himself. He did not fail to respond. "My God!" he exclaimed in disgust, climbing out of his own battered station wagon. "Look at that, will you? A parasite on society, and, if ever there is a bloody revolution in this country, it will be that gin-swigging tailor's dummy and his likes that bring it on. He spends his entire life—" On he raved, giving Jack the opportunity to carry Wung Fu's basket into the knoll unobserved. Daisy was already hopping up and down at the door. She was got up in what looked to Jack like a Miss Muffet fancy dress costume, and was leading Billy Goat Gruff by a matching silk ribbon, with a large bow at the neck. "Zack! Zack!" she squealed. "Ooh, it's going to be!" "Later, Daisy," Jack told her. "You look smashing. Where can I hide this?" Daisy, who was a born conspirator or nothing, pointed to a panel door, and Jack swiftly opened it and deposited the basket with relief. He had only an instant to register that the room seemed to be somebody's study, and thought how fortunate it was that it was not his father's. Aunt Celia and Uncle Parker were now approaching, the former attired in a dress that, even to Jack's uninterested eye, was clearly a replica of Daisy's, or vice versa, of course. Uncle Parker, he noted, looked more or less as usual, in a pale green suit with a matching waistcoat. "Hello there," he greeted Jack. "And by Jove, Grandma, what a get-up! Welcome to the knoll. And to yourself, Lucy. How are you?" He was sufficiently tactful not to comment on Great Aunt Lucy's get-up, too, but Jack was already beginning to feel uneasily that the whole setup had a nursery tale feel of unreality, what with Aunt Celia and Daisy got up as Miss Muffet or Little Bo Peep, and the two elder ladies looking as if, as well as rings on their fingers, they might well have bells on their toes. Mr. Bagthorpe, still under the misapprehension that Uncle Parker was the owner of a brand new Rolls, brushed straight past him and demanded of his sister, "Where shall I put this accursed cat?" "I'll take it, Father," said Jack swiftly, and with what at the time he imagined to be great cunning. He took the basket from his father's grasp, and quickly opening and shutting the same door as before, gave a sigh of relief. "That's them out of the way," he thought. Such was the babble and general air of hospitality and goodwill in the hall that one would have imagined Aunt Celia to have been nominated hostess of the season. She seemed quite to have forgotten her dread of intrusive vibrations in general, and those of the Bagthorpes in particular. If anything, Jack thought, she was overdoing it. There was certainly no need to embrace Mr. Bagthorpe, and it was clear from the latter's expression that he thought the same. As few people were acquainted with the layout of the knoll after so many years of absence, they all hung around in the hall, waiting to be shown elsewhere. "Shall I be getting along to the kitchen?" inquired Mrs. Fosdyke loudly at length. "If you'll be so good as to show me where." "Ah, Mrs. Fosdyke," Uncle Parker bowed gallantly, "I shall myself take your incomparable stuffed eggs through, and you, I hope, will join us in the drawing-room for champagne." They all found themselves in a large room with French doors opening onto the garden, and one burned-out corner. Jack, once in, nipped out again, intending to accost Uncle Parker on his return from the kitchen, and apprise him of the presence of Wung Fu and Thomas II. Uncle Parker, however, returned at speed and clearly had his own problems. "Got to keep Fozzie out of there if we can," he whispered loudly in passing. "Old Ben's just about had enough as it is with that damn goat. I'll get cracking with the champagne." This he duly did, with a vengeance, though the younger Bagthorpes were impatient of what seemed to them an unnecessary postponement of the real business, the banquet. "The present, Daddy, the present!" Jack heard Daisy squeal above the general hubbub. He did not much like the sound of this. Surely Uncle Parker had not already commissioned a replica of the original replica of Thomas I? He hoped not, if only because this would certainly remind Grandma of the live Thomas, and this in turn would remind Great-Aunt Lucy of Wong Fu, and there might be some gruesome snowballing of events that would finish the banquet before it even got started, and leave half the company in need of tetanus shots. As it happened, Grandma was not to be the recipient. Uncle Parker, after first calling for silence, and obtaining it only with difficulty, made a short speech. "We are all aware," he began, "that this banquet is in honor of Daisy." "And Billy Goat Gruff," squealed that infant. "Precisely," he nodded. "But it is also, we feel, fitting that we celebrate the recovery of dear Aunt Lucy and her first visit to our home." He here bowed to that lady, and both Grandma and Mr. Bagthorpe assumed expressions of extreme displeasure. The former, of course, was jealous. The latter was already beginning to scent a plot laid by the Parkers with the intent of attracting a sizable slice of Great Aunt Lucy's fortune in their direction. "Celia and I have learned of your conversion to time," he went on, "and rejoice in it. We congratulate you upon it. We were therefore determined that you should not leave without what is the oldest and most accurate timepiece known to man. If every clock in the world stopped tomorrow, if the BBC blew up and the GPO got its lines tangled once and for all, you, dear Aunt Lucy, would nevertheless be not a whit worse off." "As long as the sun shines, dearest," murmured Aunt Celia. But nobody really heard this, because Uncle Parker now, with a sweeping movement, removed a drape from an object that had been standing unnoticed by the French doors. It was a stone sundial. Instant silence fell. All the Bagthorpes knew a master stroke when they saw one. In the end, Great Aunt Lucy herself advanced slowly like a somnambulist. "Time by the sun is yours forever, Lucy," Uncle Parker told her. "By the sun and by the moon," she exclaimed in awestruck tones. "And by the moon," affirmed Uncle Parker. Jack had not thought of this. Could a sundial be also a moondial, he wondered. He noticed that his father's hands were clenching and unclenching ominously, and that Grandma was already drawing herself up in the way she did when about to pronounce. Uncle Parker had also evidently sensed that the occasion would rapidly deteriorate, and was prepared for this. "And now, the banquet," he announced. He strode forward, pulled at a rope, and a pair of green velvet curtains swept back to reveal what looked at first sight like a jungle. "I have garlanded the banquet hall with flowers," cried Aunt Celia ecstatically and unnecessarily. She certainly had. The scene now before them would have left the tropical house at Kew Gardens, as Mr. Bagthorpe later observed, standing. Especially as this well-known place does not have boars with apples in their mouths, poking out of the greenery, and mounds of pineapples, or a string quartet.